Napa know-how.
There are lots of amazing cars on the road, but perhaps none more amazing than the paid-off car. It may not be pretty, but the price is right. Heck, if you keep that thing running, it'll actually start paying you. Because with Napa Rewards, for every $100 you spend, you'll get $5 off. So keep your car running longer, stronger with Napa Rewards and watch the savings start rolling in. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how. Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
Welcome back to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast. As always, I'm Chris Manning, your host from ThroughTheSword.com and the Step Back. Today, we have a conversation with Trevor Magnotti from Through the Sword and the Step Back as well. And he's also the person that covers the EuroLeague for the Step Back. We're talking about Chidi Osman, who was in the news recently saying it sounds like he's going to come over to the Cavs, and he's someone I know you guys out there are pretty interested by. We covered his potential contract, what his role might be, what his season was like in Europe, and he's 22 years old, and I think you'll enjoy this conversation. This will be a little bit of a dip in audio quality just because of how I had to record it. Should be the last time this is the case, though. Hopefully, just recording on the fly will not be quite this bad again, but I still think you'll enjoy the conversation. And we'll be back tomorrow with a kind of a fun conversation with a special guest that's going to kind of blend some things, be a little bit more loose than we might normally have. And then we'll be back on Monday with a mailbag pod. So drop that those questions in to LockedOnCavs@gmail.com, to the Locked On Cavs post over on r/ClevelandCavs, and to Locked On Cavs on Twitter. So without further ado, here's myself and Trevor Magnotti talking about Chidi Osman as we wait for the Cavs to get back into playing actual playoff basketball again.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You just wrote about him at Through the Sword. He has long been an object of interest for Cavs fans because he's young. He's been described as this Tristan Thompson of swingmen. And he just wrapped up his season, at least his EuroLeague season, over in Europe. Where is he at right now as a 22-year-old prospect who very much seems like he's coming to the NBA?
Yeah, I think that he's... things are kind of clicking for him. He's kind of right where you would expect a player to be in their kind of age 22 development curve, meaning that he's not, I think, everything that he's eventually going to be, but he's making significant strides towards becoming that. He's still pretty inconsistent at this point. He's had a few games, you know, where he's been, you know, 20-point scorer, 15-point scorer, in EuroLeague, which is great to see, but he also has, you know, a few duds where, you know, he'll come out and he's posting a stat line of like 3 points on like 1 of 5 shooting. So he's definitely not 100% consistent with what he's going to deliver you yet, but he's definitely making strides in his game. He's doing a really good job of, hitting a good volume of threes. On volume, and by that I mean he's taken about 5 attempts per game in the Turkish league, a little bit lower than that in the EuroLeague, and he hit about 34% in EuroLeague, which is not great, but on volume that's acceptable. And then he's at about 41% from three in the Turkish league, which is lower competition, but is a pretty nice thing to see. So, you know, I think that he's getting to a good point where, you know, now is a good time to have this conversation about bringing him over to the NBA. I don't think he's 100% ready to start being a contributor consistently at the NBA level, especially for a title contender, but I think that he's going to get there over the next couple of years.
So, okay, let's start with what he is as a player before we get into how we get to the next year. David Griffin described him in his Q&A with After the Sword about him being a Tristan Thompson in the swingman mold. That's a weird phrasing to me. I don't know how, like, I get what he's trying to say. He's just sort of this workman and is going to, like, do a lot of dirty work, and he's not particularly flashy, so I get that. So that to me feels like it's the way he's describing Osman. They're not in terms of that Osman's this offensive rebounder who's going to switch a lot, right? Like, is that a correct reading?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely more like he's a role player is what I think Griffin was getting at. Definitely not that he's like this non-shooter who's just going to rebound a ton. Like, obviously, he's a 6'8 shooting guard. Like, he's not going to play the same way that Tristan is. And I don't know if that's been something that's been getting a little bit confused since those comments came out. But, yeah, I think that the main reason for that is that he's the type of guy who is going to accept the role that you give him and kind of perform it to the best of his ability, unquestioning. He's a guy that I think does a really good job of playing within his capabilities. He doesn't try to do things that he knows he's not good at. And he really tries to stick within a role. He's not one of these guys who's coming over like, you know, Davis Bertans from San Antonio. Or another good example was a Sergio Rodriguez, who came over to the Sixers from Spain. He's not one of those guys where he's coming off of averaging 18 points a game in the EuroLeague, being a top three guy on a team. He is a role player right now, and he's the type of guy that is going to, you know, he's going to get his 7 to 10 points a game. He's going to play really good defense. He's at most going to be probably the third option that you're going to have on the floor. And I think that's kind of what that comment's getting at, is just he's the type of guy that's going to be kind of an unquestioning role player, and he's going to do what you ask him, and he has some limitations, but he realizes them. And he's going to give you the best that he can consistently. So I think that it's definitely a good comparison in terms of kind of what you can expect Fetty to do. I mean, he's not going to be a guy that's going to be demanding a ton of touches right off the bat. Like, he's going to be there as a floor spacer, as a defender, and he knows this and realizes this. And that's one of the reasons that I'm pretty confident he's going to translate, is because he's already doing what the NBA is going to ask him to do in the EuroLeague.
Yeah, I think that's still how I read him. You certainly watch more EuroLeague and have watched more of him than I've seen, but it just seems like he's going to have sort of these games where he's just going to do what he needs to do. Like you said, he's going to fill in the roles, and he's certainly got the size to fill a couple roles potentially. But then a lot of games where you're just like, oh, wow, like there's clearly some upside to this guy who's still very young in his professional career. That, to me, is really valuable for the Cavs. It's something that you and I have talked about, you know, off the pod, but, like, I think if you look at how other teams have developed guys over the past couple of years, the Spurs have a Jonathan Simmons, who, of course, is a bit older, but kind of a raw player that they developed. The Warriors have given a bunch of minutes to Patrick McCaw. The Celtics have a Jaylen Brown. The Wizards have a Kelly Oubre. The Raptors have a Norman Powell. The Cavs don't have that young guy that they've actually staked rotation minutes to and actually try to develop in some way. Kay Felder kind of counts. He spent some time in Canton but didn't play very much. They clearly didn't want to give him any backup point guard minutes even before Deron Williams came to Cleveland. And Walter Tavares is something. Eddie Tavares is someone I think they may you try to develop next year, too, and he's still a very young player in his professional career. Osman, to me, is the guy that, based on how Griffin talks about him, how he sort of plays, it seems like maybe he can fill that sort of young guy role next season if they decide that he wants to, if he ends up coming over, if they don't trade him, and if they don't relegate him to long stints in the D-League.
Yeah, I mean, the ideal scenario for Osman is he comes in, he gets adjusted to the NBA next year and, you know, gets developed and kind of they spend some time really focusing on the positive attributes that they want hit, that they want to translate and trying to make him, you know, a better 3-point shooter, understand more advanced defensive concepts. But really, I think the goal would be, you know, you gradually integrate him into the lineup so that when you have to make these decisions on these role players in the next couple of years, like when Iman Shumpert either is traded or comes up for free agency, when Richard Jefferson retires, when J.R. Smith inevitably either falls off or comes into free agency again, you have this organic option that can come in and replace them, and then you aren't left just totally, you know, searching in the most in-demand market in the NBA right now, which is that, you know, role player 3-and-D wings. It's the area that the most teams want and there's the lowest demand of in terms of guys that are actually available for you to get that can come in and help your team. I mean, the wing market is such right now that we, at the trade deadline, the Raptors traded for P.J. Tucker, and that was about the best that they could do to get a 3-and-D type swingman to be able to replace Terrence Ross and to kind of bolster their lineup. These guys just aren't out there, and if you can find one that can be effective and you can bring them along organically and just plug them in when you have to make decisions on the ones that you currently have, that's exactly what you're looking for in terms of a development piece like Osman. So I think that that's the plan for them, and I think that that's, you know, the smartest way to go about it. And I don't expect him to have a huge role next year, but you're really looking at him in kind of 2018, 2019 being a significant player on this team, probably taking over the minutes that Jefferson is going to leave when he eventually retires.
Yeah, Jefferson would be 38 by then. J.R. Smith would be another year older. Amon Shumpert, I mean, he to me is sort of an interesting figure this summer because he has a contract that I think you maybe will want to get out of, in some regards, although that he has played, I think, pretty well in the playoffs. It would be fair to say that he's had maybe his best run since he was starting for a while in the playoffs after being kind of awful for about the last month of the regular season. Is Osman, he's of course 22, he's still going to grow into his body, he's still going to mature physically, but is he better suited for one wing position or the other?
I think that he can probably play both. I think that he's a little bit better suited to play minutes at the three, just because he's a little bit he's a little bit longer, and he definitely is more of kind of a vertical athlete than like a lateral athlete. So I think that he's going to have a little bit easier time defending small forwards, defending up a position at the four, than he is going to be trying to contain NBA point guards. He obviously did a fair amount of on-ball defending at Ephes this year, and the EuroLeague has a ton of point guards at the highest level that are probably NBA rotation guards. Guys like Sergio Yule and Milos Teodosic, those guys could come in and play in the NBA, and Osman did get minutes on them. So he has experience with that. I just think in the NBA context, he's going to do a little bit better defending probably full-time twos and threes. And I think that, you know, if you had to pick one position, I'd say he's probably more suited for the small forward than shooting guard, just because he does have that extra size and that little bit of a concern about, you know, his lateral agility isn't at the same level as he is kind of going up and down and getting off the floor, jumping. So I think that's probably the best answer is both, but probably leaning more towards small forward.
Could he potentially have a future where he plays some small ball four?
I think he very, very well could. I think the biggest thing that's going to have to get better for him to be able to do that is just rebounding. That's one of probably the biggest concerns with him is he is playing mostly shooting guard, but, you know, he's 6'8", he has a pretty good wingspan. I think he's at about a 6'10" wingspan. and he doesn't really rebound the ball that well. He had a he averaged 2.8 rebounds per game in EuroLeague play. Rebounding rate was sub 10%, which is not great. You know, it obviously doesn't matter as much for a guy playing two guard, but you would ideally like to see someone his size rebounding the ball a little bit more. That'll come a little bit and improve a little bit as he gets stronger. I think that's the area where you're probably going to see his body fill out the most in his first year in the NBA, just because he's going to get on an NBA strength program, and that always does wonders for guys like him that are a little bit – that, you know, have the muscle tone but don't really have – don't really have the most filled out frame. So I think that he's going to get stronger and that's going to help him, but he's really got to get better as a rebounder if he's going to have effect as a small ball four.
Well, if Tristan Thompson's thing is his rebounding and, you know, his switchability in as well, what are the things that Ozma could end up being really good at that could make him a high level role guy on the Cavs, whether that's 2018, whether that's in a couple of years after that?
I think the A1 skill, especially for the Cavs, the biggest thing that I think is going to work for him on this team is the fact that he's best at shooting from the corners. He's a very good corner three-point shooter. It's when you get into kind of those off-the-dribble threes and above-the-break threes that he misses kind of at a higher rate with those. But he's always been a pretty decent corner three shooter, and I think that that's where he's probably going to get a lot of his offense at the NBA level, is the Cavs are going to feel comfortable kind of posting him up in that short corner away from the pick-and-roll and just trying to feed him off that dribble penetration. I think he's going to be pretty successful at that, and that's an area where he can probably hang his hat on. The other one is just he's such a good habit creator. He's one of those guys that he's not the most consistent possession-to-possession defender, but with his length and his anticipation skills, he picks up a lot of steals and a lot of blocks. And I think that's somewhere that he's going to be able to have an impact. He's going to be one of those guys that's going to get in passing lanes and is going to be forcing turnovers. And that's going to be big for him. I think that's a thing that the Cavs defense has really been missing. They don't really have, outside of LeBron, they don't really have a good guy that can kind of play that weak side and patrol passing lanes and pick off passes. And Osman's really, really good at that. So I think that those are the two areas specific to this Cavs team where he's going to really be able to contribute the most in terms of a team relative weakness. I think that he's going to be a pretty good corner three shooter. He's going to be pretty good at forcing havoc, and those are two things that the Cavs really need. So I think like Thompson, where, you know, he's not the best screen setter and he's not the best perimeter defender, but the fact that he can do both of those in the context that the Cavs need him to, that's what makes him so valuable. And I think that the two things I talked about with Ozman, it's going to be the same thing.
That's interesting, because I think that is sort of what they've asked Shumpert to kind of be, and that's something Shumpert wants to do. Like, I don't know if you saw the quote he had after he dunked on Ibaka, but he's like, yeah, I want to do that more. I think there's going to be like some battle there. I think you could certainly maybe not see Shumpert as like a guy in this team in a year, in 2 years. The J.R. Smith thing, I think, you know, he's of course just going to get older at some point. I think, and RJ, I mean, RJ's 38, and they've asked those guys to do a lot of the things. What you just described is a version of it, but it's what J.R. Smith had to do against the Raptors. J.R. Smith was asked not to shoot. J.R. Smith was asked to defend and to be pesky, and that's what he did against Toronto and DeMar DeRozan. That's important, I think, too, to know. Like, if Ozman could do that at a base level, I kind of think, especially because and maybe the Cavs will be different next year, maybe LeBron's minutes will catch up to him next year, the regular season could be a room for, in my mind, for them to experiment. You could get Kay Felder minutes, you could get Eddie Tavares minutes, and you could get Chetty Osman minutes, especially because you will have that 17-man roster next year, so you could carry those guys all at once and kind of just let them play in certain instances and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that other elite teams have been pretty good at in recent years. I mean, Toronto definitely has no qualms about if they get up, you're going to see Bruno, you're going to see Bebe, you're going to see Jakob Poeltl come in and DeLon Wright come in, and they're going to get their young guys' minutes. The Spurs, they're going to get Davis Bertans and Jonathan Simmons and DeJounte Murray minutes if they get up. The Rockets are really good at this with guys like Sam Decker and Montrezl Harrell. I think that you're right. The biggest shift that we could see in the regular season next year is instead of, you know, the kind of disjointed like Jordan McRae, Korver, Richard Jefferson, Fry, and whoever else lineups that kind of have populated the blowout minutes. Like, that's going to be now Felder, Tavares, Osman, maybe guys like Shumpert and maybe some Channing Frye minutes to kind of add some like veteran stability. But like, this is an opportune time to get those guys minutes. And that's where that development comes in. That's the one thing that the Cavs use the D League pretty well. They don't use team minutes pretty well. And part of that's due to the fact that, you know, they just don't care. So they are in a ton of these situations. They're blowing as many teams out as, you know, you would expect a team of their caliber to. But also, you know, they need to be judicious about who they're giving those garbage time minutes to. And, I think you're right with the larger roster and the ability to carry more young guys as we head into 17-18. I think that's something the Cavs have got to do. If they get up 12, 15 points on somebody in the fourth quarter, you got to get these guys some minutes.
Let's think about Osman's ideal path here for a second. Is his contract up with SA?
I believe so. I'm fairly certain, although that stuff is always up in the air.
Right. So let's say he can come to the Cavs and they decide that they don't try to deal. I don't think, especially if Griffin's still around, and Kobe Altman is a guy who has done a lot of work scouting Osman. Like, it's been one of the guys that have spent a lot of time focusing on Chetty, and who theoretically, like, if Griffin does, like, take the Hawk shop or something like that, would be a potential replacement for David Griffin. I think, like, you want to bring him over sooner rather than later. I think you'd want to get that wrapped up. This is my ideal path for him if he's going to come over next year and I'm the Cavs. I think you'd want him at Summer League. I really do. I think you'd want to have him, Tavares, and Felder playing a lot of minutes together at Summer League, and just functionally playing a lot of minutes, however long and however many games you get there, because they are your young guys. Unless you buy another pick, you're not going to have another guy there. You could get undrafted guys. You could get other D-League guys. That, you know, wouldn't shock me if Jonathan Holmes or someone like that was on their Summer League roster. But if you want to invest in your guys, that's where you get the minutes, and then you have him obviously around for training camp and stuff like that. I mean, what would you do with Osman? And would you have him, you know, play D-League minutes next year? And, we don't know the roster construction yet. We don't know if they'll utilize two-way contracts. And I doubt Osman will be on one of those two-way contracts because he would make any money, really. And why would he not? Like, if he's going to come, he's going to get some sort of, like, roughly fair market value. But what would you do with Osman?
Yeah, I think that having him play Summer League is very logical. Just to kind of get your eyes on him and kind of see how receptive he is to American coaching, and also just kind of get him used to, you know, getting used to the game atmosphere in NBA context. I mean, it's not that different playing overseas, but it is a little different. So I think that, you know, getting him one-on-one with the coaches before games and during practice sessions is going to be helpful. Getting him familiar with the guys that he's going to spend a lot of time with playing in those garbage time minutes, I think is going to be helpful. And so, yeah, I think that Summer League is a great decision for him. And I think that using him kind of in the context of, you know, the way that the Cavs use Joe Harris and the way that the Cavs manage Kay Felder and Jordan McRae, and that's the type of guy that, you know, he's going to be next year for this team. I think that, you know, having him flip back and forth between the D League and Cleveland is going to be useful. I think giving him some experience there, you hope that that's maybe like a first half of the season thing, and then he's able to kind of move onto the roster full time. But, you know, that may not be the case. He may need a little bit more time in the D League. I think that he's not going to be one of those guys that's going to go to the D League and put up a ton of stats like Felder is. He's, you know, he is going to continue to play the same role, which just isn't going to result in him averaging 35 points a game in the way that Felder playing the way that he's most comfortable does in the D-League. But I think that, you know, it's reasonable to consider all options with him because he's, you know, I think you have to go in with the idea of, I don't expect anything out of him this year. You have to use this year as kind of a transition year and kind of build the team with that in mind. And, you know, if he comes out and he does surprise and he is able to earn rotation minutes in year one, that's a huge steal for you.
Last thing, is he the best prospect the Cavs have?
Yeah, by a significant margin.
What makes you say that?
I just think the fact that he fills a logical role on this team, in a way that Felder being this volume scoring backup point guard and Tavares being this kind of slow footed 7-3 shot blocker don't really fit with the rest of what the Cavs want to do. Tavares was a second round pick, I believe, in the same draft. And Felder was, you know, a late second round pick, but Osman was the highest drafted player of all these guys. And, he was drafted in probably the deepest draft between the three of them. So I think that that does matter for something. He has kind of always been a guy that's on a little bit higher radar than Tavares and Felder have been. And I just think that with his skill set, the way that it's going to translate, and the fact that we've seen him in the context of playing rotation minutes for a pretty good team, albeit at the international level, but that is a step above the D-League. It just is in terms of talent level, in terms of competitiveness. Across the board, EuroLeague is a better league than D-League, and Osman was playing more successfully than Tavares was in Tavares' D-League minutes, and also I think he just is a little bit further along the development curve than Kay Felder.
Yeah, I like what Kay Felder's done in the D-League. I'm pretty skeptical of him as an NBA player at this point. Like, mm-hmm. I like what he can do. I like how quick he is. I like that the game has slowed down for him. But I just don't know. The defense stuff worries me. If you're not Isaiah, can you play defense and be that small? And, like, is he just going to be able to adjust his game to fill the Darren Williams, the Dele role? I just don't know. I kind of wonder if the Cavs, in another world, if, DeJounte Murray would have been, the kind of young point guard they would have actually wanted. You know, he certainly might not have been gettable, but he just seems like he might fit more of a mold of what they need from that spot. I really like what Felder can do in certain spots. I liked how he played in Canton, but I don't know. And I think you're right about Tavares. He's very impressive when you watch him and how big he is and how well he actually moves. But he's functionally just a huge human being. He doesn't move. He's never going to be fleet-footed. He's probably never going to shoot really. I like having him there almost to keep some wear and tear off Tristan, and to block some shots and maybe give you that rim protector. Especially if you want to play Channing at the four a little bit, but I don't know. I think there are certainly limitations to what he can do, and he's not like a modern NBA big. And neither of these guys really are Osman is, but it doesn't seem like Felder or Tavares are these modern NBA players that you can plug into different spots and maximize. Right? They sort of seem like they have to be pigeonholed and utilized in certain ways for the Cavs to get actual return on them.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. Those are guys that, you know, are your typical B-League guys. They're guys that you're taking a flyer on to, you know, see if they can, you know, become something that's useful to you. Osman's a guy that you're banking on becoming a rotation player, and I think that's an important distinction to make between these two. You're not banking on Kay Felder to become to become your de facto backup point guard and rotation player, and you're definitely not depending on Tavares to be, you know, your backup center. It'd be nice if both of them could be in those roles, but you're not banking on it in the way that you're banking on Osman to come in and be that cheap 3-and-D wing defender that is so valuable in this league and is so vital to what the Cavs do in order to maximize lineups around LeBron. I think that's the biggest distinction for me is, the Cavs don't need Felder and Tavares to be good in the way that they kind of need Osman to be good.
Yeah. Trevor, great stuff as always. Make sure you go read Trevor's piece over for the Sword. He did the most comprehensive Chetty Osman breakdown that I think you will find anywhere on the internet, and he knows more about EuroLeague than I think anyone I personally know. So, Trevor, as always, thanks for coming on. And before the draft, I'm just going to invite you now. We'll do something before the draft. Maybe the Cavs don't have any picks, but you know the draft better than probably anybody that I know, too. So we'll just do some, we'll bullshit a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, last year the Cavs didn't have any picks, and I wrote like a draft guide of like undrafted guys that the Cavs could pick up, and it did like 650 comments on Fear the Sword.
I know the Fear the Sword
group loves the draft, and they love talking about the future, even if they don't have any stake in the draft. So of course that's always going to be something that we'll focus on.
Yeah, I have a post up every week for mailbag questions for this podcast on our / Cleveland Cavs, and like I got like a Derek, I get a lot of Derek Williams questions, which is hilarious because he's not actually good. I get random other questions, you know, usually about the defense, and then I got this one this week. Can you just do a big off-season preview? And I'm like, bro, it's May. We got a month until the finals. We got 2 months until free agency starts. We're going to get there, but Cavs Twitter and our Fear the Sword community that you and I are both, you know, writing for and are members of is undefeated when it comes to getting excited about the draft and having takes about the draft, even when it doesn't even matter for the team.
Exactly.
Yeah, undefeated. Give Trevor a follow on Twitter at Illegal Screened. We'll be back on the Lockdown Cavs podcast tomorrow to talk a little about Celtics Wizards and who the Cavs might get next.
Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.